I'm excited to be here today. I'm just like, just pumped. Just pumped to be here. For you those don't know me, my name is Benjamin Williams. My father and mother are here. My dad is administrator at the church, Daniel and Christine Williams. I've attended Maranatha for about 9 years. Last year, or a year and a half ago, I started attending Southland Church because I was doing some programs there. I'm just so excited to be here. This place is always going to be home for me. And just when we were worshiping, my heart and my spirit was just resonating. And I believe it's because a spiritual heritage has been invested into me from this place, from when I was a little boy of 9 years old all the way up until 18 when I left the church to go to attend another. A spiritual heritage has been invested into me. And it's one of sonship, it's one of heritage. And just reading this verse, it was just perfect. It was just perfect because leaving this church and going to another to attend it, there was always this piece of this church, and it was that sonship, that identity thing that just was born into my spirit, was just in there. And I noticed, and I just want to honor the church before I jump into my message, that heritage that I carried, that I was a son of God, that I was adopted, that was my identity. And it was a strength that I carried into other places. It was a strength that you, as a church, invested into me, that other people were encouraged by people, other people were edified. And, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, here we go, talking about being sons again, talking about identity in Christ again for the five billionth time, here we go. But there was something invested into me. And it's powerful. It's powerful. So I just wanted to take a moment just to honor the church for what you've invested into me as a person, and actually a piece of the body that has followed me as I've gone to other bodies, that they have recognized and seen the strength that's been put into me. Wow. Yeah. Whew. It's good. Oh, it's good. I'm going to be talking about intimacy. I'm going to be talking about brides. I have a lot of experience being a bride. If you don't know that, Bride of Christ over here. Before I jump into my message, I mean, what I want to share, I just want to give a little bit of backstory of where this all came out of. Because, like I said, I've been gone for about a year and a half doing this and that. And really what I'm going to be teaching from came out of a testimony of my life, of a season that I went through. And it was a very hard season. I'm 19 years old. I graduated 2017. Had a summer. I decided to go do a program at Southland called SOM, School of Ministers. It's pretty much just a discipleship training school. Did a year of that. Met a girl there. Started dating her. Stuff was awesome. Got involved in the church there. I started doing a middle school ministry there. I had these 12 grade 6 boys that I was given to invest in and speak life into, and it was awesome. Things went along. The first year of the program ended. There was a second year of the program. I decided to go back for the second year of the program. That was this September that the program started. Started the program, still dating at this point. Things are moving along. And the relationship was emotionally unhealthy for me, but I did not realize it at the moment. So I jumped into the second year of the program with this girl, you know, no sweat, we're just going to do this thing. And then September program starts. In November, I get a word from God and he says, you're dropping out of school. I'm like, what are you talking about? No, I'm not going to drop out of school. Like, I want to do ministry, man. I want to do stuff. I want to speak in people's lives. He's like, nope, you're dropping out of school. Okay, I don't believe that's your voice, God, but you know, that's okay. So put it about on the back burner a little bit. And as weeks gone by, I started wrestling with my heart of like, is this where I'm supposed to be? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing with my life? Is this truly where I'm supposed to be at this season of my life? And a discontentment started to rise in me. Feelings of this is not what I'm supposed to be doing right now started to rise in me. The Holy Spirit's kind of tapped me on the shoulder. He's like, Benjamin, remember what I said? Remember what I said like a month ago? This is it. No manifesting. So I prayed into it. I sought counsel from many people. And it was like word after word after word was like, yep, this is what you're supposed to do. And you're supposed to leave. So halfway through November, I drop out of the school. A couple of people freak out on me because they're like, what are you doing? Like, you're going to be this person and you need to be doing this school to be this person and all this. And I'm just like, well, God's got other plans. Sorry. So I dropped out, which was very hard for me because a lot of my focus, a lot of my passion had been focused in that school. So when I dropped out, I kind of felt like a fish out of water. So I turned to the relationship And I was like, okay, this relationship's moving along. I think I want to marry this girl. So let's start planning our wedding. So I start planning this wedding. Looking back, it's absurd. But, I mean, in the moment, it's just emotional attachments and all that jazz, right? So we start planning our wedding. Woo! We're just going to get real here. Start planning this wedding. But in that period of dropping out of school, I started to analyze relationship for what it truly was, and realized that this was not a good fit for me. This was not what I wanted. But it's a bit of a dilemma once you've already discussed marriage and you're working on buying a ring and it's getting made and you've booked places and you're doing all this stuff. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, I actually don't want to do this. So I ended up breaking up with this girl 2 weeks before I planned to propose to her. And that was very hard for me. Just to have that emotional attachment and all of a sudden just boom, it's just gone, it's done. And for a lot of reasons, I wasn't sure why I was breaking up, but all I knew was that I needed to get out because this did not feel right. So in that period, and this was the sovereignty of God, I'd moved out at that point. So I was living on my own for the first time in my life. I dropped out of the school and I just broken up with this girl. And it was December now. And I was like, well, this sucks. Like, life has no direction now. What am I doing with my life? And I didn't handle the breakup very well at first, and I just kind of slumped in this depressive state and just kind of stayed home and watched movies for, you know, hours on end, and it was just not good. And 2 weeks like that went by, and all of a sudden, Holy Spirit kind of tapped me on the shoulder, and he's like, what are you doing? I was like, what do you mean what I'm doing? I'm grieving, I'm mourning. He's like, yeah, but you're not doing it with me. He says, you're doing it by yourself. And he says, they call me a sanctuary for a reason. They call me a refuge for a reason, Benjamin. And one night when I was just by myself, I was just terrified to be by myself. I couldn't handle being alone, but I hated being with people at the same time. And I was in my room and I opened up my Bible to Psalms and I just started reading Psalms and I just started weeping and weeping and weeping and weeping as Jesus started to minister to me. I am your refuge. I am your sanctuary in these times of trouble. And Jesus spoke to me and he said, the intimacy you've been chasing for your whole life is in me and me alone, and you will only be satisfied when all of your passion and intimacy is for me. He says, it can't be for anything else. It can't be for a program. It can't be for a woman. It can't be for a dream. It can't be for anything. It can only be solely in me. That is the only place you will be satisfied. So that was a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, that I had that moment, that revelation. So that's really the foundation of this message, is where I'm coming at. So I'm going to be talking about intimacy. I'm going to be talking about brides. I'm just going to open up with Hosea. That's where I want to teach from. Hosea chapter 1. I'm just going to grab a couple verses out of there, and then I'm going to jump over to chapter 2, read a little bit from there, and then chapter 3, and then I'll jump into what I got prepared. So Hosea's wife and children. When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, go take to yourself an adulterous wife and children of unfaithfulness, because the land is guilty of the vilest adultery in departing from the Lord. So he married Gomer, daughter of the Dibilium, or however you pronounce that, and she conceived and bore him a son. And then Hosea and Gomer had a bunch of children. God said, give them prophetic names about judgment that I'm going to put on Israel, but also there will be a blessing with it. Jumping over to chapter 2, I will not show my love to her children because they are children of adultery. Their mother has been unfaithful, and she has conceived them in disgrace. She said, I will go after my lovers, who gave me my food and my water, my wool and my linen, my oil and my drink. Therefore, I will block her path with thorn bushes. I will wall her in so that she cannot find her way. She will chase after her lovers, but not catch them. She will look for them, but not find them. Then she will say, I will go back to my husband as at first, for then I was better off now. She has not acknowledged that I was the one who gave her the grain, the new wine and the oil, who lavished on her silver and gold, which they used for bail. Therefore, I will take away my grain when it ripens, and my new wine when it is ready. I will take back my wool and my linen, intended to cover her nakedness. So now I will expose her lewdness before the eyes of her lovers. No one will take her out of my hands. I will stop all her celebrations, her yearly festivals, her new moons, her Sabbath days, all her appointed feasts. I will ruin her vines and her fig trees, which she said, or her pay from her lovers. I will make them a thicket, and the wild animals will devour them. I will punish her for the days she burned incense to the Baals. She decked herself with rings and jewelry and went after her lovers, but me she forgot, declares the Lord. Therefore, I am going to allure her. I will lead her into the desert and speak tenderly to her. There I will give back her vineyards. I will make the valley of Achor a door of hope. There she will sing as in the days of her youth, as in the day she came up out of Egypt. In that day, declares the Lord, you will call me my husband. You will no longer call me my master. I will remove the names of the Baals from her lips. No longer will their names be invoked. In that day I will make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field and the birds of the air and the creatures that move along the ground. Bow and sword and battle I will abolish from the land so that all may lie down in safety. I will betroth you to me in forever. I will betroth you in righteousness and justice, in love and compassion. I will betroth you in faithfulness, and you will acknowledge the Lord. And that day I will respond, declares the Lord. I will respond to the skies, and they will respond to the earth. And the earth will respond to the grain, the new wine and oil, and they will respond to Jezreel. I will plant her for myself in the land. I will show my love to the one I called not my loved one. I will say to those called not my people, you are my people. And they will say, you are my God. And then just jumping into chapter 3, then I'll start talking from there. The Lord said to me, go show your love to your wife again, though she's loved by another and is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes. So I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and about a homer and a leth hook of barley. Then I told her, you are to live with me many days, so you must not be a prostitute or be intimate with any man, and I will live with you. For the Israelites will live many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred stones, without ephod or idol. Afterwards, the Israelites will return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. They will come trembling to the Lord, to his blessings in those last days. Whew. So we should be living as brides and not as prostitutes. That's pretty much the core of the message right there. That's what Mr. Hosea is getting at. Christ has called us to be one with him and to not to wander away in search of being filled up elsewhere. So prostitute in this context, spiritual prostitute, we see that wording used in the Old Testament over and over and over again. And my interpretation of it has always been attempting to fill myself with something other than God, attempting to find purpose with something other than God. So whenever I talk about prostitute in this message, that's what I'm alluding to. Attempting to seek beyond the promises and truths that Christ, our groom, has spoken over us. So we're talking about brides, we're talking about Hosea, and I just want to backtrack all the way to the beginning, and then I'm going to move forward from there. So in the beginning with Adam and Eve, we have something, intimacy and relationship. With Jesus, you know, we have Adam and Eve in the garden, we have God, they're jamming, they're having this relationship, it's awesome. But sin moves in, our fallen nature takes over, our father loses his children, and the son lost his bride. We were created to be one with the Father, and because of sin, there is this separation. The one thing we were actually created to do was lost, being connected to the Father. So Jesus, you know, being Jesus and God, what do you do when you lose something you love? You look for it. You go chase it. So we see Jesus, we see the promised Messiah, we see this God chasing his people over time and space for this love of his life, and he puts everything that he's aside for that one vision of being together with the love of his life again. And the promised Messiah waits for the opportunity to go to his people. And I imagine that would have been a grueling wait for our Jesus to see his people again, you know, go to idols, go to other places for intimacy, and him saying, no, guys, you don't get it. You don't get it. You don't get it. So we see the Old Testament. God rages and fights for his people because he wants them to understand his jealous love for them. But many run to idols for comfort. We see judgment spoken over the people over and over and over, but always a remnant is saved. You know, there's always judgment. There's always bad things that happen, you know. But there's always a remnant. Mercy is always shown. You know, Jesus keeps his people alive. So, you know, Old Testament, we see all of this. Fast forward all the way to Jesus, you know, through the Old Testament. We see Jesus goes on this journey of humanity. He runs the course. He lays everything that he's aside so he can have his bride back. He lays down status, dignity, comfort, just so he can have his lost brides back. He is so inflamed with love that he says, whatever it takes, Father, whatever it takes, I want her back. Let me go chase her. Let me go pursue her. I want what's rightfully mine. So in our story, we have Hosea and we have Gomer, and Gomer is placed into relationship with Hosea. They are married together. She was a woman of prostitution, but now she's a bride, and she's a bride with Hosea, and they stay together. She's supported, she is loved, they have kids together. I think they have three. You know, that doesn't happen quick. You don't just have three kids, just boom, you got kids, right? There's a process. They're obviously together for a while, but there's a point when Gomer goes back to her old life. There's a point she goes back to her prostitution. You know, there's a moment when Jesus has taken me and he's placed me in this place of being supported and having comfort and having provision. But there's moments when I go back. When I go back to that prostitution lifestyle, seeking, you know, fulfillment and purpose from other things. I forsake the love that was before me, the love that was pursuing me, and I went and chased after the pleasures of this world instead. You know, Jesus comes knocking on my door. He's like, Benjamin, I want intimacy. I want relationship. I'm like, no, that's okay, Jesus. That's okay. Like, it's too much work. It's too messy. Like, I just don't have the time, Jesus. It's okay. I just don't really want that right now. I'm too busy. You know, intimacy, it's messy. I don't know if I want to let you in. So I chased a fantasy over a family, selling myself to the highest bidder, because when you don't have a value, when you don't have something to hold on to, then you open yourself up for anybody to appraise the value you are. Because when we're not rooted in the value of Christ as being his bride, gaining our value from him, then we open ourselves to the whole world saying, oh, that's what you're worth. That's what you're worth. That's what you're worth. That's what you're worth. And I'm just kind of like, okay, I guess that's what I'm worth, because nobody else is combating those lies in me, because I'm not fellowshipping with Jesus, right? So Satan's suitors come and they seduce us away from true love, you know, because Jesus is not the only groom chasing us. You know, Satan is also a groom, but he's an evil groom. He wants to manipulate and corrupt and destroy, and he's chasing us with not equal passion. He's chasing us with passion. I'm sure he wants to passionately destroy us. So yeah, they come, I refuse Jesus, who is kneeling with a ring before me, and I tell him off. So I separate myself from his voice, but he never stops pursuing his bride. And that is the core of the message I want to get across, that no matter how far we go, no matter the darkest place we go, Jesus is saying, no, my son, I'm pursuing you. I'm chasing you. I'm there. Because he's consumed with this vision of us being together. So many of us sometimes get lost in this identity drift. I've many times got lost in this, and I give more and more of myself to this world, and it gives me less and less. But when this happens, I have had a tendency to throw away more of my heart, more of my soul, more of my body, because I must get a return eventually. You know, this world must fill me up eventually. There must be something, you know, in there. I'm just searching frantically. There must be something here that's going to give me some life. But it never happens. Sin always sucks you dry of life. And in those moments, I run, I hide, I seek comfort somewhere else. I chase after elusive security that always seems to be at my fingertips. So I find another husband, you know, I find another identity. I stay with them until they fail me. And then another and another and another and another, each attempt more desperate than the next. But through it all, Jesus' voice calls me home. Through it all, but I refuse. Until all at once, you find yourself in these positions where you're empty, you're lonely, you're hopeless, and you start to wonder, who would want me after I've given so much away? But in that moment, our King makes his entrance. Even though my heart and soul has been known by 100 different idols, and I've given myself away to sinful passions 1,000 times, Jesus says, hands off, that's my bride. No matter where we've gone, no matter where we've done, he says, hands off. That is my bride. Stand down, darkness. That's my father's kid. You know, when Hosea, Jesus says, go, Hosea, go find your wife, go find Gomer. Could you imagine the situation there? Your wife is a prostitute. She's gone back to her life of prostitution. And God says, Hosea, go find her. Go find her. What would that situation look like? For a man to go chase his wife while she's in a state of prostitution, that's not a clean situation. You know, that's not neat and tidy. You know, maybe he finds her in the act. Maybe he goes into a brothel and she's there, and then he says, no, that's my wife. And he pays 15 shekels for her and then a bunch of other stuff. He pays for what is rightfully his. You know, he pays for right, she's already his wife. But he pays for her to get her out of that situation. Jesus didn't need to die on a cross to get us back. But he paid with blood for what was rightfully his. You know? So when Jesus finds us, it's not clean situations. Jesus seeks us out in those dark situations. He seeks out those messy situations. And he's not scared of that. He's not scared of that. He just says, I just want you back. I just want you, just look at me, son. Just look at me. Open your eyes. Open your eyes. I will show my love to the one I called not my love. For he knew my exact position through it all. None of my search was lost to him. So in that place, our king makes his entrance. He's come to propose to his bride. He walks down the aisle with a cross on his back. He slowly moves through the streets, his eyes on you, his eyes on you. The crowds jeer and mock him, but his eyes are locked with yours. There was no bread at this feast because he is our portion. No wine to be seen, but the blood that was paid for with 30 silver coins was poured out in abundance. And so the groom pronounces his vows of faithfulness to the world for his bride while he hung from a cross. As blood and sweat dripped off his face, Jesus said, I do. I bind myself with you. There was a price to be paid to get us back. So Jesus paid for what was rightfully his. And the cross for me is a proposal. The cross for me is a proposal. Jesus is on his knee and he's saying, will you bind yourself with me? Will you marry me? And we accept. We say yes. We go into this relationship, this engagement. But so many times we forget in this state, in this waiting time, that we're engaged. You know, because heaven's going to be the wedding. Heaven's going to be the time where we're going to be united with him fully. Fully. All part of us are going to be united with him. But we're in this state of waiting here. We're in this state of being promised to him. And sometimes we wait. Sometimes we forget that we're that waiting bride. And we get bored of the waiting. So we go like Gomer, you know. What would that situation look like? She would have, you know, start to entice herself. Well, maybe I don't want to be in this relationship. Maybe I don't want his support. Maybe it's a little scary to be with him. So she goes and entices her old ways. Just as we sometimes, even though we're in this waiting period, even though Christ has died for us, he's pronounced his love for us, we're in this waiting time, we sometimes could say, well, maybe I still want that life though. Maybe I want to go back to that. Maybe I still want to entice those old things. I know I definitely do. So we live in this place. Christ has spoken his love over us. We stand engaged, waiting for the wedding to be complete. So will we wait patiently and faithfully for our groom to return, or will we continue to entice our old suitors to come back? There's really two steps to this. You know, we see with Gomer and Hosea, Hosea marries Gomer, and Gomer chooses to be married with her, but Gomer doesn't choose to stay. I'm messing up my names. Hosea marries Gomer, and there's connection, there's union, but Gomer chooses not to stay. You know, with the cross, we choose to accept the cross, but then we need to choose to stay with the cross. We need to choose to stay submitted to it, not to leave. But this is difficult, because to the waiting bride, we need to break ties of our relationship to enter into a new one with Christ. Yes, we've slipped past the grips of Satan, but he still hunts us diligently, attempting to slowly corrode our character and life until we finally turn back to him. You know, because the battle didn't end. You know, sin was defeated with the cross, but the battle did not end for our souls, because we're in this union, we're in this engagement. But you better believe that Satan's still going to say, well, don't you want this though? Don't you want this candy? Don't you want this candy? Come and you see this? You see this? You see this? And Jesus is saying, no, just look here. Just look here. Don't lose focus. Don't lose focus. And Satan is trying to tempt us back to this old way of life. So what then shall I do? And I feel like in my life, the times that I most easily succumb to sin and temptation is the times I'm idle in my relationship with Christ. And I feel he's given me a challenge with this whole intimacy. Don't become idle. It's not enough to simply accept the cross and get our get out of jail card. We must submit to it and take up the freedom given us. Or we will slowly fade back into the darkness from where we came. In a relationship, in a married relationship with a man and wife, if you're idle in the relationship, you stop investing into it, you stop spending time with them, what's going to happen? Relationship's going to die. Somebody's going to get discontent. Somebody's going to leave eventually if you just stop investing. Our relationship with Jesus is just the same. If we stop investing into it, if we stop cutting out time for him, you know, we make time for the things we love. So we're not making time for Jesus. If we're not going on dates with him, we're not saying, Jesus, let's go and just love passionately. Let's go do some stuff. Or I want to spend time with you, spend time in the word, spend time worshiping you. Eventually, you're just going to become idle and you're just going to slowly fade back because there's no passion anymore. You know, for a marriage to work, for a relationship to work, there needs to be passion. There needs to be pursuit. If there stops being pursuit in a relationship with us and Jesus, we'll slowly become idle. And idleness leads to idols. Because eventually we're going to turn to something else fulfilling. Because we can't stay in that vacuum of having nothing to hold to, having nothing to serve. Because we need to serve something. It's just ingrained to us. We need to have vision. We need to have purpose. So we have idleness with Christ. We're going to seek idols with something else. Habit always breeds comfort. So if we've never established a new habit, we will shift back to our old way of things. We must be vigilant. It will take diligence, passion, and intimacy. If we don't chase these things, Satan will be more than willing to give us something else to focus our minds on. You know, if we're not actually, Paul talks about whatever is pure, lovely, and all those things, focus on those things, right? If we're not actually intentionally focusing on those things, Satan will be more than happy to fill up our minds with anything else. You know, it takes intentional focus and sacrifice to walk through this. I've stayed idle many times because it's safe, it's comfortable, it doesn't require any work on my part, and it comes packaged as being saved. You know, Scripture says work out your salvation with fear and trembling. It doesn't say work out your salvation by sitting on the couch and doing nothing, right? But it's easy to stay idle, you know, because I can still hold to this persona of being like, I'm saved, I'm a Christian, but I don't have to do any work. You know, but that's not the relationship Christ has called me to. You know, when he says bear your cross and walk with me, he didn't want us just to take our cross and just limp behind him. You know, he said, I want to come and give you the fullness. I want to give you fullness. He didn't come to skimp out on us. But as I said before, Christ didn't come to die to simply offer life, a path to heaven. He came to offer us a lifestyle, a life full of passion and adventure. I know for myself, I often become frustrated with the lack of life in my relationship with Christ, but it's scandalous to expect Jesus to do all the work, the growing for me in my relationship. Because then we lose out on our faith being strengthened. We lose out on the revelations of knowing who the Father really is. If he just gave everything to us on a platter, we would never appreciate it for what it is. Christ gave up everything for his cause, and he asks us to do the same. The cross will come alive to us in action. A relationship with Jesus, this is what I was saying before, will become exciting when we start investing into it. You know, Jesus does his part. He comes the way. There's always a middle ground to meet him at. You know, because there's still free will. There's still choice. You know, he only comes so far, and then he says, son, just come. Just come, son, come. You know, there's a place where we have to meet him. We have to join him. But the beautiful thing is the Father's heart. It's, you know, Jesus is over there, and he's just saying, come, son. And I'm just stumbling towards him because I'm a baby. I don't know how to walk, and I keep stumbling. I keep stumbling. I keep falling over. But he just keeps saying, come, son. Come. Come. I don't care that you fall down. I don't care that you stumble. I just want you to come. You're making progress. You're walking forward. Keep going. Don't just stay on the ground. You keep going. You know, when a dad, his kid starts walking, he doesn't get mad at the kid when he takes his first couple steps and falls down. That's never the Father's heart. The Father's heart, it says, you're walking. You're doing it. Keep going, son. Keep going, daughter. Keep walking for me. Keep pushing into this thing. He says, I paid it all. I paid it all on the cross. When you stumble, you proclaim my victory and you keep going. You don't just stop. You don't just lie on the ground in defeat. You keep going. You be vigilant. You be passionate. You say, you set your eyes on that thing and you say, it doesn't matter what kind of distraction is going to be in my vision. I'm just going to push for that thing. I'm just going to go for it. But it's funny because I'm afraid to surrender all that I am for Jesus. But when I take a second glance at what I'm losing and gaining, it doesn't even compare. Because when you get a taste of that rawness of intimacy that Jesus has for us, you're never satisfied with anything else. It's never satisfying. Relationships are not fast food restaurants. You know, you don't just drop in and get what you want and pay your sum every other day. It's not how it works. No. Real relationships will require you to get lost in them. Lost in zeal for the greatest love that will ever be portrayed on this earth. You know, I'm just using the bride and groom analogy a lot because this is what Christ and me are. You know, he's my groom, I'm his bride. With a relationship with your husband and wife, you don't just say, hey, how's it going? Hey, how's it going? And you just don't talk to each other for the rest of the day. And you just say, hey, here's some flowers. Here's some chocolate. You know, you don't talk for a week. And then maybe another day you have a couple conversations, but you know, you never do anything special for your wife. That just, it dies. It dies. You don't just drop in every now and then and just say, hey, hey. And then you just keep on doing your thing. You know, but Jesus, it's the same. We don't just drop in and just have, you know, some casual conversation every now. No, there's intentional, passionate, intimate, you know, experiences with each other that will build relationship. Idleness. I'm going to go back to the idleness thing. It is the wide road. It will kill us. It will sap our passion for Christ. You don't learn to love someone without time, commitment, and investment into them. You know, you can't love somebody if you're not willing to learn their heart. You can't love somebody if you're not willing to sit with them and say, well, what makes you tick? What are you passionate about? Why do you hate these things and love these things? You know, you're not going to understand that unless you spend time with the Father. Our relationship with Christ is no different with commitment, investment, knowledge as. Allowing ourselves to drift in life and not be intentional with time and resources will constantly undermine God's vision for our lives. Because God has spectacular vision and mission for every single one of us here. But if we're not willing to spend time with Him, we're never going to get it. You know, Paul talks about be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and then you'll be able to test and know the will of God. And that passage just smacked me upside the head the other day, because so often I'm like, God, what's your direction for my life? What's your will for my life? And he just kind of pointed at that passage. He's like, well, if you transform your mind, then you're going to know my will. You know, and transforming of the mind takes time. It takes intentionality with Scripture and worship and pressing into Him. We need to have vision and direction in our lives, or we will check out. No one can serve two masters. We cannot live in a split allegiance with Christ and with our old masters. Gomer cannot have a relationship with her prostitution and her Hosea at the same time. It doesn't work. Just as us can no longer have a relationship with sin and with Jesus, our groom, at the same time. One of them must go. The bride that never sets her eyes on a new vision will find herself in positions of prostitution over and over and over and over. If we never set our eyes on the passion and intimacy our groom, Jesus, has for us, we're going to go back to our old lifestyle over and over and over. Will we let our identity remain in the world, or will we push ahead and become brides in waiting? For if we never make that switch in our minds that we belong to someone and something else, then our old ties will eternally drag us down. We've been called to be set apart. You know, Gomer, it probably wasn't a slow transition back to prostitution. She probably started enticing old relationships. She probably started frequenting old places. You know, she started thinking about it. She started mulling it over her mind. It wasn't immediate, you know? And Satan is the same. He overplays eventually, but there's always a slow drag in. We need to remain intentional. We need to keep the mindset that we are set apart. You know, could you imagine the damage in a relationship if I was engaged with somebody and my fiance went and slept with a bunch of people before we were married? Could you imagine the damage that does with us? That's what we do with Christ when we go to sin fulfilling, when we create idols in our lives, when we engage in spiritual prostitution, finding purpose in other places. Then we become that fiance who's going and sleeping with a bunch of people. And Jesus is like, what's going on? I thought we were set apart. Like, I thought you were mine. I thought we were engaged here. And he has grace and he welcomes us back. But there's hurt there. I can only imagine the pain in his heart as he sees us and he's engaged, we're proposed to, we've accepted, and all of a sudden we're like, well, I'm going to go chase these things. I'm going to go find filling over here. Can you imagine the pain in his heart for us? And we don't even get paid for our services as spiritual prostitutes. You know, there's no return. There's no return in searching purpose and identity in anything else but the Father. The rapture isn't a rescue mission, it's a wedding date. We need to have this picture, man. It's like heaven is a wedding. It's going to be the biggest wedding in the world. It's going to be this union that's going to be finalized. So I'm calling up the generation of engagement. the generation that has looked at the face of their king and said, I will stay true to you no matter the cost, just as you have stayed true to me no matter the cost. When Jesus was on earth, those 30-some years that he spent here, he had a lot of chances to compromise. There could have been a lot of places he said, this is too hard, I don't want to give this comfort up, I don't want to give this dignity up, I'm just going to do something else. There was a lot of chances he had to compromise, but he gave it all. He gave it all. He stayed true. He stayed pure. He stayed pure to the end so he could be the perfect sacrifice. You know, I think about my own struggles with impurity in my life and thinking towards marriage and thinking, oh, I get discouraged sometimes because I'm like, I feel like I've given up stuff and I feel like there's going to be a loss of intimacy there because I've given myself over to impurity in these places. But Jesus was never that guy. He was never the guy that fell down. He said, no, I'm going to keep myself pure all the way to the end so that my bride can experience the fullness of intimacy with me. Because he saved all of himself for us. He saved all of it. He never compromised. He never compromised. God has called us into covenant, and we have been given the most extraordinary mission on earth. Stay true to our groom, and then to tell the others a wedding is coming. Because there's a lot of people out there that don't know their brides. There's a lot of people out there that don't get it. They don't understand they've been paid for. They don't understand there's a purpose they can be living in. You know, and it's our job as Christians to go and tell them, no, you don't need to give yourself to the world. You don't need to give yourself to this humans and to flesh and to all this pain. You can actually give your heart to Jesus. And he's a groom that actually will take care of your heart. He will comfort you. He will give you security. He will give you purpose. You don't need to prostitute yourself anymore. You don't need to give yourself to that lifestyle because there's fullness. There's fullness to be found here. A date has been made and it's coming. The king is coming back. And the groom is a man who can be trusted. He has the strength to carry your heart. In him, peace is found because he transferred your burdens, your trespasses, your failures to his shoulders. He's a groom who brings comfort. He brings rest. I have renounced the name of this world and have gained a new name. We now bear his name. And following this whole analogy of bride and groom, in a marriage, when the bride is married, what happens to her last name? She's changed. She loses it. Just as in the spiritual realm, when we become married to Christ, when we have this engagement, we're married, we actually lose the name, we lose the heritage of this world, we lose all the names. All the names the world has spoken over me are now lost. They're not mine anymore because my name is with Christ. My name's Christ now. I've actually lost all of those names. I've lost the identity that this world has spoken to me. I've lost all of those lies that have been spoken over me because my name is now with Christ. And the beautiful thing now is because when a bride is married, then she actually finds belonging in that new name. That is actually her new name. The old name has passed away. So now I have found new belonging in Christ. I have found new purpose in him. My value is transferred from what this world would appraise me to be to the value of being a son and a bride belonging to a heavenly heritage. His heart yearns for all the world's so-called saviors to be exposed for the hollow counterfeits they are. Because there's so many grooms in this world saying, no, I have what it needs. I have what you need. 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 And Jesus is just saying, come on, man. Like, I have what you need. All of them, they're all counterfeits. They all just want to suck you dry. They all just want to take from you all this bondage and this anger and this lust and depression and anxiety. All that stuff, it's not going to fill you. All that stuff's just binding you up. You don't need it. I can fill you. I can fill you. So if we are to remain strong and devoted brides who live in a world with 1,000 voices and suitors demanding to tell us who we are, we need to hold to Jesus' voice, which calls us always. Remember, the cross was a proposal. It was a proposal to walk with the Maker, the groom who desires to know you and be known. Will we answer his call of intimacy? Will we answer? When he comes for us in those messy situations, will he be our refuge? Will he be our sanctuary? Will he be the place we seek? Will we search the fullness of his kingdom? Or will we split our allegiance between sin and him? Jesus didn't come to die on a cross to establish a religion. He came to offer a relationship. He wasn't seeking slaves to serve him. He was seeking orphans to adopt. He didn't come with rules on his lips. He came with passionate love to invest. His hands didn't offer a crutch, but his hands brought healing to our bones. Fullness. He came to offer fullness. He came not to feed us scraps, but he gave us the bread of life to feast on. And as Christians, we haven't been called to just stumble and limp with our cross on our shoulder. We've come to bear that thing with the fullness of passion and power that Christ has given us. We're walking in victory. We shouldn't be walking in defeat. We shouldn't be just limping along with this thing. We shouldn't just be limping along. No, we have a refuge. We have a fortress. And his name is Abba Father. It's God. Tell me what you can't do when God is your fortress. What can't you do when God is your fortress? When he's your place of rest. But you need to spend time knowing the fortress if you want to know how to use its functions to combat the enemy. You need to familiarize. I mean, however you pronounce that word. I promise. I was homeschooled. I love you, Mom. Only for 6 years, though. You need to spend time walking through that fortress, man. Because so many of us stand in that fortress, but like, if this was the fortress, and then we just stand here in this corner, and we're like, God, help me. I need you. I need you. I need you. But he's just saying, turn around and look at the fortress, man. Look what you got. Look what you got. And the Holy Spirit's just waiting. He just wants to take us on a tour of this place and say, yeah, man, there's freedom here. There's power. You know, there's warfare here. He's like, just look at the walls. Look at these gates, man. Look at these armies I have inside of here that we're going to storm the gates of hell with. You know, you can't just stand in the corner of the fortress and just be like, and then we get all depressed because we're like, man, I just need something, God. I just need something. He's like, turn around and look at the fortress you be in. This is about warfare. We're doing warfare. And the beautiful thing is, yes, the Lord is our fortress, but we're always called to be foot soldiers eventually. And we go out because the kingdom is not defensive. The gates of hell, it's not an offensive weapon, it's a defensive one. And we're coming for it. Coming for it. And it's funny, just on my own life, if the cross is a proposal and I'm engaged to Christ, like imagine just the weirdness if I proposed to somebody and they said yes, and then all of a sudden I just check out of the relationship and I don't talk to them, I don't work on anything, you know, I just say, okay, I'll see you on the other side. I'll see you during the wedding, honey. I'll see you on the wedding day. It's okay. No, and the engagement period is a busy period. Like, I experienced a little bit of it, not a lot of it. A lot of you have experienced it. Like, that's not a chill time. Like, this is, like, we're going now. We're planning this thing. You know, wedding preparations need to be made. Invitations need to be sent out. You know, wedding dresses need to be found. Decorations need to be set up. Like, we want to pack this wedding to the max. Like, we want to push this thing. So when Jesus proposes to us and we're engaged with them now, we don't just check out and say, see you at the wedding. See you at the wedding, Jesus. You know, I'll be here doing my thing. No, 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 no. No, this is go time. This is go time. We're doing stuff now. You know, we're sending invitations out to everybody who will take it. You know, because everybody's been invited to that wedding. Everybody's been invited. We don't just check out of the relationship. The cross is just the start. The cross is the epicenter of that earthquake. Everything comes from that thing. You know, that's not where it stops. That's where it starts. That's where the power and the fullness starts coming, and we just start going for this thing. Whew. Wow. That's where it starts. That's where it starts. This is warfare. This is warfare. I believe God's rage is only growing as he observes our prostitution unto idols, The choice wines of this world are sand which catches in our throats. All the fantasies and lusts of man are ash burning our hands as we grasp for something solid in this fog of confusion. O man, how long will you remain distant from my spirit? How many times will you rip open my heart and deny me access to yours? Love is jealous for a reason. I am jealous for your attention because I'm the only one who can be trusted with your soul. How many times, my son, will you tear your spirit from mine so you can indulge and entice your flesh? Come and stay set apart. Stay in that place I put you in from the start. I've made you the center of my affection. Come and rest, my son. Come and rest. I've chosen you for this. I have chosen you for love. That is your purpose. Rest in me. I will carry you. Come and join me in surrender. I see all the pain of your compromise. I've witnessed every tear sliding down your cheek. Get lost in me. Lose everything you are in me. And I promise you will never find yourself wanting. You will never find yourself wanting. Give up your frustrations and come dwell with me. I have chosen you. You are my bride. I will take care of you and trust your heart to me. No one else is worthy. Open your ears to my voice. No one else is worthy. Root your identity in me. No one else will satisfy. There's a reason one of the names for God is Jealous God. Why is love jealous? Because it's the only love that will fulfill. And Jesus is just have this anger in him when he sees us chase other things to be filled. And he's jealous for us because he's made us the center of his affection. And it blows my mind. But Jesus has looked at us. He's looked at our positions. He's looked at all our sin, all the darkness we've been through. And he says, I just want to make you the center of my affection. I want you to experience everything that I am. I want to pour everything that I am into you. And he's jealous against anything that combats with that place, the center of our hearts. Because he wants to fill up that place, him and him alone. And that's really my heart with this whole message. With Hosea chasing that bride. I've been Gomer 1,000 times. Going back to vomit. Going back to the darkness that I've indulged in. But my testimony is that is where Jesus meets me every time. He doesn't take a couple steps back and say, no, just clean up before you come to me. No, he's right.